Hi, I'm Nathan Ryder, and welcome to the Viva Survivors podcast, where I talk to PhD graduates about their research, their Viva, and life after the PhD. This is episode 11, and today I'm talking to Dr. Claire Savvy, who did her PhD in neurotoxicology at Newcastle University, and who now works as a researcher training and development project officer at the University of Leeds. Claire's Viva was less than a month ago, so it was great to talk to her today and hear about her experiences while they were still fresh in her mind. Okay, so Claire, can you tell me a little bit about your research?
Right, so my research was looking at organophosphate pesticides, which are used to kill pests on sheep and various animals and on crops. And I was interested in looking at if workers were exposed to these pesticides for a long time at low levels, could there be a change to their brain chemistry and their behaviour? And I was particularly interested in looking at serotonin and dopamine. And for behaviour, I was looking at sort of associated things to do with serotonin and dopamine, so mood, memory and attention.
Well, was this built on existing research, or was this, a new hypothesis that you were looking into?
No, it's not a new hypothesis, actually. It's been around for quite a while. You might have read about it in the news. There's been some concern about farmers reporting side effects of being exposed to these pesticides at supposedly safe levels, but no one's actually bothered to look at it before in adults. They've only looked at it in sort of younger generation, if you like.
So what did you find out through your research then?
So actually, my project, kind of quite a lot of it was negative data, but towards the end, we found that there were a lot of changes in gene expression. So initially, we'd had a look to measure serotonin and dopamine levels using a machine called HPLC, and that didn't turn up any changes. So we had a look at gene expression, it's more sensitive, and you can look at the whole genome. And from the genes that were changed in expression, it was suggesting that there might actually be an effect on serotonin and dopamine, but also GABA and glutamate systems. So the impact on behaviour towards that could be a change in perseveration or impulsive behaviour.
Wow.
And that was suggested by some behavioural tests we did as well, as sort of tied in with the perseverative, impulsive behaviour side of things.
Does your research have policy implications then, do you think?
Yes, definitely. I was actually funded by the Health Protection Agency to look into it. So I suppose worst case scenario would be that the pesticides I had a look at could be withdrawn from the market, or they're going to change the level of exposure that's safe, if you like. So looking at the markers I found that have changed, work down to a dose where you don't find that change. But I didn't actually get around to that in my research, so that's, I suppose, the next PhD student's job.
Yeah. So is this research being picked up by other people then, now that you've finished your PhD?
So I guess I finished it so recently.
Yeah.
My work hasn't been... There is some work on a publication, but it hasn't come out yet. So
yeah.
I suppose not just yet, apart from interest at conferences.
Okay. We'll come back in a moment to just how recent your Viva was.
Yeah.
But can we go back a little bit further first? Because I'm interested... How did you end up doing a PhD?
Well, actually, I initially didn't want to do a PhD. I did a master's and then I decided I was going to work. And I was working in a quality control lab attached to a pharmaceutical company, so manufacturing tablets. And I realised I wasn't going to get anywhere if I carried on working in that lab unless I had a PhD, or there wasn't much room to go up. So that's sort of, I guess, my reason behind doing the PhD. And then picking the project was because I was interested in toxicology. And I was quite interested in that from my undergraduate and my master's degree. So I suppose I've carried that through to my PhD as well.
Is it fair to say then that, if you like, the main reason for doing the PhD was this idea of career advancement? Was that what motivated it?
Yeah, I think so. And I was interested in research as well. So if I wanted to get into the more research side of things, I needed the PhD. But I knew it was going to be hard, which it was. So I wasn't going to sort of jump into it lightly. Quite a few of my friends had already started and had told me it was very challenging. So.
Yeah. And was it?
Yeah.
Was it as challenging as you...
I think I had quite, I don't know, I suppose a lot of people probably have a tough time, but I had quite a rough ride with data collection, things like that. Machines kept breaking and just things like that sort of set you back months. So yeah, it was quite tough to spend, especially when you're getting quite a lot of negative data. It can be quite disheartening when it's sort of endless month after month after month you spent preparing all these samples and then running them, and then you come out the other end and you have nothing, effectively. We shouldn't be looked on like that, because at the end of the day, it's disproving a hypothesis, which is for the purpose of it. They were quite positive about the fact that it was negative data, because as far as they were concerned, I was still answering the question that I set out to do. And it was just as valid as if it was a positive change, and it should still be published, because it does have an impact on public health, I suppose, from my research. So yeah, they, I mean, they, from their point of view, they thought I should publish even the negative data. So I guess I'm quite supportive about that and thought I should be more positive about it.
Well, we'll come back to the Viva in a second, but so your Viva was, well, it was relatively recently, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 29th of October.
And today is the 12th of November, so it must be fairly fresh.
Yeah, still quite fresh.
In your mind. What did you do to prepare for it?
I actually did quite a lot, because I thought initially my Viva was going to be at the beginning of October. So I started to gear myself up towards it then. So I did about 2 or 3 weeks of prep, and then I did had a break because it got pushed back because of various things to the end of October. So I did another 2 weeks. So I had a chat to a lot of people who just had their Vivas recently in my office, and had a chat to my supervisors about what I could do to prepare. And basically read my thesis quite a few times. I got my supervisors to give me any questions they thought I might be asked, and then I prepared answers for them and then practiced answering them out loud. And after reading my thesis through a couple of times, I came up with any questions I thought might be asked, any weaknesses in my work. And I made sure I could remember what I did and why, which sounds daft, but because it's such a big piece of work, and I think a big drive behind the Viva, for me at least, was explaining my rationale behind perhaps methods or explanations of results and, you know, things like that. I also had a look over sort of the really key literature in my field, sort of keep myself on top of that, and also checked for anything recent coming out since I'd submitted my thesis. And I had a look at my examiner's papers as well, just to get a feel for what their angle was on the field. What else? I think I Googled sort of what typical questions would be in a Viva, so for more generic stuff I might be asked, and I prepared some answers for that. And I also attended a Preparing for Your Viva session at university, which was quite helpful. And that involved sort of just going over the format of the exam and having a run through what sort of questions you might be asked, and having a practice session with the other students who attended, which was quite helpful. And then I think on the run up towards the end, getting close to the Viva, I've just got my boyfriend to fire questions at me and practiced answering them out loud, which I think was really helpful.
Wow, it sounds like you did everything.
Yeah, I pretty much did. I was quite nervous about it, so I just thought the best way to sort of dull the nerves down was to be ridiculously prepared.
Did you do anything like annotating your thesis, or, you know, marking it up in any way?
Yeah, I did. Well, I think the first time I read through, I just had a read through of it, just refamiliarised myself with it after having such a break from looking at it. Then the second time I went through it in pencil and marked any silly mistakes I found, like typos or any potential questions I might be asked. And then I marked out each chapter with a little note. What do you call it? Not a post-it.
Like a post-it.
Yeah, like just mark it out each chapter so I could flick through each chapter really easily. And then I had post-it notes through the thesis as well, just any questions that I wasn't able to remember the answer to off the top of my head, so sort of just a few bullet points to jot my memory a bit.
Did you have anything as formal as a mock Viva?
I was offered a mock, and I had a chat with some of my friends. There seems a split between people who had a mock Viva and people who hadn't had a mock Viva. In the end, I decided not to have one, just because personally I felt like that was going to just add another level of stress.
How did your feelings change at all? Or did you just feel like a background stress about it?
I think it was sort of swings and roundabouts to a certain extent. So sometimes I feel a bit calmer because I feel really prepared, and then I start thinking, oh my God, you know, this is 3-4 years of my life coming to an end, and I have to try and remember everything and sound smart and just start to panic. But yeah, so managed to remain on a relatively even keel, but I was definitely nervous.
Okay. And so what about when the day came around then? Again, something like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Probably less, actually.
Yeah, I think so. On the morning of the Viva, I felt incredibly sick. I really felt nervous. I actually thought I was going to be sick. It was awful. But once I got up, made sure I had some breakfast, got ready, and got in well in time. And once I sort of got into university, I calmed down quite a lot. I guess that took away some of the anxiety of making sure I was there on time and I had all my stuff with me. And I was still quite nervous until I was in the Viva itself, and then it took me about, 10, 15 minutes to calm down, and then it was okay after that.
What was the format of your Viva like? Did you have to do a presentation at the start, or was it straight into questions and discussion?
Well, for mine, it was just straight into questions and discussion about it. That I went in, and my examiners sat there, and my internal had a chat through what the format of it would be like, and they discussed questions, and sort of he said who would be leading the questions, and yeah, and then it just launched into it.
I think you mentioned that after 10 or 15 minutes, the stress seemed to go away. Was the Viva stressful in general, or was it just how was it?
Not anywhere near as bad as I built it up in my head to be, actually. It was quite straightforward, really. I wouldn't go as far as to say I enjoyed it, but it wasn't stressful after that first sort of 10 minutes. Where I was settled in. My examiners were quite nice, and they're saying, we know you're going to be nervous, and they asked me some sort of straightforward questions at the beginning, which are a bit more generic to kind of like settle things down. And to be honest, it actually felt a bit more like a chat. They were genuinely okay. Interested in my research, so it didn't really feel like too much of a grilling.
That's cool. So how long did the Viva last?
Just short of 3 hours. Which is shorter than I expected, because most people in my lab seem to be at least 4 hours, so I was quite pleased with that.
I'm amazed that you just said at least 4 hours,
yeah.
Because when I've talked with other people, either on the podcast or in general, whenever I mention that mine was 4 hours, they seem really shocked.
Oh.
It's the first time I've come across somebody who was saying they were expecting at least 4 hours.
Well, that seems to be the standard of what people get in around my field, I suppose, or at uni, who I know.
Wow. So were there any, if you can remember, I don't know whether you've blotted it out of your memory like I've blotted most of mine out, but do you remember any particular questions or any types of questions that you got asked?
I think one of the first questions I was asked was to summarise the hypothesis of my project in a sentence, which was quite interesting. and then I think the other questions, I think there's some generic questioning about sort of where my research sat in amongst the literature, just sort of, checking that I knew the major authors in the field and where the research was up to date. And then it got more specific, and it was asking about methods, why I'd picked them, and then sort of going, we went through each chapter. Like, it got me to summarise each chapter, kind of what the aims were, what we found, and then they would ask me questions about it from just each results chapter, and then the general discussion. There's only a couple of questions I couldn't really answer, which was quite good. I'm trying to think of some more specific stuff.
Well, can I ask, when you just said there were a couple of questions that you felt like you couldn't answer or you didn't answer, how did your examiners react?
They were fine with it. They'd said at the beginning, if I didn't know the answer, then just say that I didn't know. So that's what
yeah.
I think I probably would have dug myself into a deeper hole trying to pretend like I knew the answer and making something up that was totally wrong.
It's nice to hear that from somebody, because when I talk to people about Viva prep and things like that, a lot of the time people have this, I guess, like a really big fear that if there's something they don't know,
yeah,
then that's going to be it. That's going to be the end of the story.
Yeah, no, I don't think that. I'm quite certain, in fact, that the examiners don't expect you to know everything. They don't know everything. And at the end of the day, you know more about your research than your examiners ever will. I suppose that's a comfort to a certain extent. And Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine to admit that you don't know something, as long as it's not 90% of the viva you don't know.
Yeah, I imagine it would be quite a short viva. A lot less than 3 hours. Yeah. Did it seem like it was taking 3 hours?
No, it didn't, actually. I think we did have a rest break at one point, so I looked at my watch then and I was like, oh God, like, it's already been sort of 2 hours or what have you. But it definitely didn't feel like it was dragging along. It didn't feel like, oh my God, you know, get me out of here.
How did you feel when it was finished? Or?
Well, when I was sent out of the room to wait for them to sort of write their report and chat about what they were going to decide, I felt quite good about it. It felt like it had gone quite well. Sort of the general feeling I got was I was able to answer things and they were happy with my answers. So I wasn't too worried that it wasn't going to pass. But obviously it was nice to hear it when I went back in. That was amazing. That was really good when they said I passed.
So what did they say about the viva?
Well, what I was really pleased about, I suppose, after all the preparation I did, was the first comment was that I was really well prepared.
Excellent.
Yeah, they just thought, they thought the research was great, that the flow... I've got a report back a couple of weeks ago saying that they liked the sort of structure and the flow of the thesis and that I defended it well and that I obviously really knew my research and my field and that, that I'd done a really good viva. And they just wanted me to add a couple of things to my general discussion. But it's something I thought of after I'd handed it in anyway that could have been added, so I wasn't completely out of the blue.
Well, have you started your corrections, or...?
No, I haven't. I just got the official report last Friday, so I haven't got around to it yet.
Okay. And what sort of things have they asked you to do?
It literally is just going through it, like, fixing typos, which I kept finding, which is very annoying. And they want me to add a couple of paragraphs in my general discussion just to address the fact that I looked at the pure compound of the pesticide, and in a real-life situation, it would be in a mix with other things. You wouldn't just get the pure compound. So it's just to acknowledge that, really.
Well, that all sounds really cool. It sounds like it was a positive experience after a lot of hard work.
Yeah, it was quite good, actually, because it's definitely a challenge the whole way through, and writing up wasn't particularly pleasant either, so to have a viva go that well was really pleasing.
So what have you been doing, I guess, since you finished? Well, I guess you're not quite finished yet, but what are you doing at the moment?
Well, at the moment I'm doing an internship at Leeds University in researcher development. So I'm sort of like a project officer for postgraduate researchers, and I'm responsible for helping organise a postgraduate research conference we're holding on the 3rd of December.
So
I've just started... a thesis Twitter conference, which is on the 11th of December, so we're hoping that people would like that. So yeah, I've done a sideways step from my research, but I'm still interested in academia and supporting early career researchers, so I guess that's why I've lined up this internship.
Yeah. So what's a thesis Twitter conference?
It's something that started in New Zealand, and it's basically tweeting about your project over 6 tweets.
Okay.
So the first tweet would be perhaps your title, and then the next tweet might be sort of introducing a background, and then the next few might be your results, and then the last tweet would be your conclusion. So it's supposed to be communicating your research to the general public and being very concise.
Yeah. For a second I was thinking you were going to say you have one tweet to compress your whole PhD, but...
No, I'm not that mean. You get 6 tweets.
So how is this being run then? Are people, generating the tweets in advance? And then...
So what we're getting people to do is to register for it online and submit their title. And on the day, they'll have from 9 till 5 to send their tweets in, and then I'll retweet them. And they should send them in order, numbered in order, so I can put them back out in the order, and we suggested that they do draft them out and word first. So.
Have you potentially got a lot of people signing up for this?
At the moment, I think it's probably early days. We've already had people sign up, and the deadline's not till the 7th of December, so I'm quite positive about it. I think it'd be really good, and plus they have a chance to win £100, which is always a good incentive.
Yeah, that cash prizes are always good. Is this just open to people postgraduate at the University of Leeds?
Yeah, it is for this year, for the first year we're trying it.
Is the internship a sidestep for good, or is this something that you're interested in now and you're hoping to continue with research at some point?
I think it is a sidestep for good.
Okay.
I think my PhD is to put me off research, perhaps.
Okay.
I think for me, I'm quite keen on supporting early career researchers, and I've gotten interested in that through my PhD itself, taking part in sort of skills training and, I suppose, stuff outside of my PhD that's been quite good, and I've quite enjoyed it, and so far I'm really, really enjoying time at Leeds, so yeah, I'd be quite keen to see if I can move forward with that.
What does your PhD mean to you then?
I suppose after 4 years of a lot of hard work, it means quite a lot. Yeah, it's a really big achievement, and to have finished it on a high note like that means quite a lot. And it probably means quite a lot to my family and friends, because they're sick of me whinging. So they're probably quite pleased it's finished as well.
But pleased in, pleased in a good way, rather than, oh, thank God for that.
Yeah, pleased in a good way. And a little bit of thank God for that.
Okay. Okay, well, I think we're almost finished, Claire, but I have two questions still remaining, if you're happy.
Okay.
What advice would you give someone who was starting a PhD?
I'd make sure that I had regular meetings with my supervisor, make sure you've got that support network, and also make an effort to get to know people. I don't know, if you're in the lab, then in your lab, or even in different research areas, because that support network of other PhD students is really important. I would also suggest doing stuff outside of your PhD, skills training wise. I would definitely recommend demonstrating and teaching, because that's really important if you want to move forward, either in academia or perhaps even outside of it. It really is transferable skills, and it is so important. At the end of the day, not everyone is going to come out of their PhD and go into academia. There is that sort of pyramid effect where there are less posts available, and people do, as I have, decide they want to be away from academia. So engaging in that sort of skills training, perhaps, I don't know, communicating your science to the public or things like that is really helpful.
Yeah, I guess I do skills training for a living, so I really agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a culture, I don't know, perhaps in your field, but in mine, to think, well, why did you do a PhD if you didn't go into academia? But for me, I think it's totally beneficial even if you don't pursue an academic job, because the skills you acquire in a PhD are so invaluable to any job. And I think,
yeah.
I mean, without it, I don't think I'd be able to get into the job I'm interested in now. So,
yeah, a PhD does just give you high-level skills. And you gave us a lot of advice earlier, or a lot of the things that you did. But is there anything that you would pick out in particular that someone could do or should do to prepare for their viva?
I'd say the most important things would be to be really familiar with what you've written, which sounds daft, but when you hand it in and then you don't look at it for quite a while, it's quite easy to forget the content. So reading it a few times and being familiar with it, I'd say, is probably the most key thing. And also, if you're not going to do mock viva, I think practicing answering questions out loud is really important. I think that helped me quite a lot. And obviously, preparing any questions you think you might get asked. So I suppose those three things.
Well, cool. Thank you very much for picking those out, Claire. I know that people are going to find your story of what you did to prepare really helpful. I guess there are things there which some of them are really common that people get told to do.
Yeah.
But you don't always hear somebody say so forcefully that it was really beneficial having done it.
Yeah. Well, I think it made a big difference to me, definitely.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sharing your time today, Claire.
That's no problem. I hope it helps someone, because I know how stressful it can be. And it was helpful to me in the run-up to my viva to come and listen to your podcast and just listen to other people's thoughts. And I think one of the best comments that I read was, if you're at the viva, you're not really going to fail.
Yeah. And just so that everyone knows, I didn't pay Claire at all to say that about coming to listen to the podcast. Claire's not going to say anything now.
No.
She's just going to check her online. She's going to check her bank account.
Yeah. Where's the chocolate?
Definitely. Thank you very much for sharing your story today, Claire. I know it's going to be helpful to other people.
No problem.
that's all for episode 11. Thanks again to Claire for giving her time and being a part of the podcast. If you've got any questions or comments about the podcast, then please, please get in touch either through the comments on the site, by emailing podcast@viva-survivors.com, or by sending a tweet to @vivasurvivors on Twitter. Till next time, I'm Nathan Ryder, and thanks for listening.